You hear me okay? Great. Loud and clear. Title of the talk is What's the Secret Heart of Our Experience? We all go through difficult times and difficult experiences which we are 100% sure are reality. That they're overwhelming or they are completely like a tsunami, or they're just completely believed in. We feel a pain in the body, a headache, a migraine, and it's impossible to see it any other way. We come to a retreat, but we still got this thing, and we can't see it any other way. I've got a headache, and that's it. Pain in the body, and that's it. That's reality. We may have a story which is my story, and this is the way I am, and we can't see it any other way, and this is the way I look at things, and this is what I believe, or this is what I know, and we can't see it any other way. It feels like reality. It is to us reality. We may be convinced, and really it's happening more and more these days, of a view, a very strong belief. Often it's about them, there, or there, somewhere else, or some other group, or some other person, or the politicians, or them over there, or the enemies. And we have, it's totally true, it cannot be argued. It can be a virus, or it can be a vaccination. Doesn't matter. Take your pick. But it's a total reality. And we cannot imagine my life without. I can't imagine my life without A, B, C, D, this way of living, this flat, this car, this job, this husband or wife or partner. We just cannot imagine life any other way. And this sense of we cannot imagine things to be different is missing some very basic insight. Firstly, we are not able to see these as experiences. We see them as reality. And sometimes people can get even pretty cross if they're this big thing that's even a belief system, a strong belief. If you say, well, is it an experience? People get really offended. It's not an experience. It's the whole thing. It's me. It's the world. But still, in a way, it's an experience. So we're not able to see states that we totally believe them to be real. We're not able to see them as experiences. We're often not able to call them by their true name, to really see them as they are. We're not able to be free of them or to be bigger than them. Can't hear. Okay, I'll try. We're not able to be bigger than them, or freer than them, free of them. And we're not able to see what's underneath them. And that's why we think there cannot be any other way. And so it's just an example of the journey that we're going on in spiritual life, where we begin to take responsibility for our experiences. And when we do that, we can begin to see what is an experience and what makes it and what's underneath it. And that is a journey to liberation. And the Buddha said liberation isn't in another experience, a better one, somewhere else, in heaven. The Buddha said liberation is in the heart, the secret heart of our experience. And what is that secret heart of our experience? It's a place which is unconditioned, which has no qualities. It's a source like underground water, the water under the ground, which appears in loads of different ways, in the tap, in the Mayan, in a spring, in a river, in the rain, but it's all coming from underground water. So the underground water of experience is pure, is unlimited, is unconditioned. You can call it pure consciousness, which has no qualities, it has no colors, it has no shape, it has no identity, it has no description. And then this pure consciousness kind of meets the world and kind of wraps itself around a shape called me or a tree and say, ah, I know a tree, I know me, I have a problem. What's doing that? This pure consciousness is a kind of like the ocean and a wave is wrapping itself around. And this is language in the tradition, that consciousness takes the shape like a hand. It's my hand. My hand takes the shape of this. So now the hand has a shape of what it's holding. Before that, it didn't have that shape. So consciousness is taking the shape of what it is we meet in the world and turning it into something based on conditions, based on memory, based on the past, based on what we need, what we want, and so on. But underneath there's a very pure place, unlimited. And available to every one of us. In order to kind of meet this pure place in us, this unlimited place in us, we can't go to it through kind of abstract ideas or dreams of some other ultimate place, or we go to it through experience and asking, what is the heart of experience? And that's very, I would say, typical of the Dharma as a practice. The Dharma says, you go to the unlimited through the limited. You go through to the unconditioned through the conditioned. Unconditioned abilti mutne, through the conditioned. You go to beyond the story through the story. And it's seeing the truth of what arises as an experience. What is really happening? This is a very, very important question. I was suggesting that you ask that question when we were doing the walking meditation. What is really happening right now? That is not a superficial question. That will take you all the way. It goes on and on. It goes deeper, 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 deeper. What's really happening right now is diving into the heart of experience. And you always come up with no answer. the answer is the diving. That is the answer. And a lot of the practice is undoing the obstacles. When the Buddha first tried to teach, he came with the language of beyond and beyond, and it didn't work. So he understood he had to teach why it is that we're all not Buddhas. And he taught the Four Noble Truths, which is about where we feel stuck and where our conditioned mind is, to through the conditioned mind to the unconditioned. And it involves us to meet and let go and drop the obstacles and the patterns and the beliefs and the places we're stuck. And realize that in the end, nowhere is stuck. We may feel it cannot be any other way, but if we go deeper and deeper, it can be. It is just an experience. And we can be bigger than that experience. So what that does, if we undo the blocks and the obstacles and the stuckness we feel, it opens space. And in that space, the unconditioned, the unlimited, will just appear. It, in a way, appears by itself. Given space, you will just know that the world is bigger than I thought it was. I am a bigger being than I thought it was. It just appears. So we can't really hunt for nirvana. We can just stop the obstacles to nirvana. Because if we hunt for it, it's another issue that we have to deal with. So the source of things will shine out when we give it space. Mindfulness and samadhi are primary ways in which we do this. And there's two very nice images from the tradition, one of which I mentioned in the group already. Take sawing a piece of wood with a saw. So you're sawing a piece of wood and you want to cut it. So you're sawing and sawing and sawing and you want to cut it, and you're thinking, well, I'm going to build a table, or I'm going to put it in the roof, and it's got to be this long and this long, and why is it taking so long, and maybe my saw is blunt and maybe I should get a proper machine that will do it more easily, etc., etc. Actually, what's really happening is one point where the saw is touching the wood. That point, although that point is moving, it's always one point. The saw is touching the wood always at one point. And that's where the whole thing happens. Without that, nothing can happen. Another traditional image is of a wagon wheel. And the wagon wheel, the whole wagon is turning and moving, and the wheels are turning, and the wagon is getting somewhere. And we're busy with where we want to get to. The whole thing depends on one point, which is the point that the wheel is touching the ground. That is the whole essence of this wheel. Mindfulness is a bit like that. It's kind of penetrating the one moment, tsir, the axis point, where everything happens. And from there, we build our story, we build our experiences. But what's the heart of the experience is this one point, the foot touching the ground, the breath moving, the touch of the wind on our face, the moment that is always there and always changing and is always just one moment. And therefore it's endless, but it's always one moment. Like the wagon wheel is turning, but there's always one place only where it's touching the ground. And that is an image of our practice. And in a strange way, there's no time in that. Time appears when we talk about the wheel turning. But there isn't time in that moment that is touching the ground. In this moment, there is no time. And this moment is therefore endless. Akaliko in the Pali language. And not so easy. But we can also be aware in this moment that we're not aware. That's also part of the picture. We can be aware in this moment we're not aware. Meaning, I'm lost in thought, or the wheels are turning. But the moment we see, oh, I'm lost in thought and the wheels are turning, then we're back. Then we know. And then we are meeting with our consciousness an experience of lost in thought. So it's quite subtle, but I have a quote here from an old psychiatrist that was one of my gurus way back, Ronnie Lang. So I don't know any of you kind of know anything about him, but he made a revolution in psychiatry in the UK. And he said, the range of what we think and do is limited by what we fail to notice. But because we fail to notice that we fail to notice, there's little we can do to change. Until we notice how failing to notice shapes our thoughts and actions. So we just have to notice that we're not aware and we're already aware. He just said it in a more poetic, maybe psychiatrist type language, I don't know. When we begin to see how this point of the wheel touching the ground, how we work with that, we make a wagon, we make a wheel, we look at it in many ways, we ask how the wagon is moving, we step back and see how we're constructing our experience, from what pieces we construct our experience. Our needs, our body says something, we need something, we have feelings, we have a sikkum, a summary of things, we have choices, we have a view, we have a world view. There are layers and layers and layers which in our experience which we build from this one point, like building the wagon and the wagon traveling. And we can see that. And as soon as we see that, we're back into noticing. We're back into that point of awareness. We see that we're constantly building ourselves from what we pay attention to. We pay attention to something and we build ourselves that's us, the wagon is us. We build ourselves from what we pay attention to, and we just can see that. And we can see it in the very small, the way we build ourselves in small things. Oh, I need to get on time to the sitting, otherwise I'll be late and I can't get in. That's a thought, that's a self, that's a need, that's all kinds of patterns in that. Or we can build in our big dramas, we can see this happening, our angers and our beliefs and our views and emotional dramas, and we can see the same thing. It doesn't really matter, it can be in the small or the big, but we see the way we are constructing. From this one point, we are constructing worlds, layer after layer after layer. Mindfulness, awareness, and samadhi, which is one-pointed focus, will take us all the way. There is a very rich tradition in the Buddha Dharma, where different schools have taken different aspects of the teaching and kind of said, well, go all the way with that, very typically with samadhi, with concentration, one-pointed focus, jhana, which is a deep kind of diving in and diving into one place, or my mindful awareness itself. Each of those qualities can take us all the way to freedom. But when we do that, we find that all of the other qualities join. So in other words, if we go all the way with samadhi, as some traditions and some monasteries, we'll find that mindfulness turns up, love turns up, care turns up, insight turns up. It happens when you go all the way to any aspect of the path. If you go all the way, you get to the end. But somehow on the way, it all adds together. We here in this retreat, we're here for a weekend. All our practice is in daily life. It's unlikely that we can take one thing and go all the way with it. We need to empower our mindfulness to really get to the source. We need to give more power to the mindfulness. And this is where we add to mindfulness powers or qualities. I remember I used to go to a bunch of pubs and bars around Tel Aviv. Maybe some of you know that or heard me there. It just sort of happened, and I just kept doing it. And one young guy asked me, if I practice mindfulness, will I be happy? It's a fair question, and I had to say no. It's not so easy. But I would say, if you practice mindfulness with adding to it other powers, other qualities, yes. Or if you practice mindfulness adasof, all the way, also yes. Because you're there totally in the now, akaliko. And in this now, if you're really all the way in the now, whether it's mindfulness or samadhi that takes you there, actually there is perfection there. This now, with a wagon wheel on the ground, this perfect moment, which is always moving, it has to be perfect. It's total
nowness. It's not, cannot be, it has no building around it. The building around it gives us the problems. I'm not saying that mindfulness, as we practice it here, or is really powerful. Without going all the way adasov to be a monk for 10 years, but it's really powerful. I remember watching a film of a school in California where they were teaching. They had mindfulness classes of some black teenagers, and listening to the teenagers that really didn't practice that deeply, but they had it in school every couple of days, and they had dialogue about it, and it just, like, amazing to see the changes these teenagers experienced, and how they felt they had a place to go, and they had a safe spot, and they could come back to themselves. And it was very lovely to watch this film. And they could reconnect with each other and with others. They felt a little bit more valued in their life. But nevertheless, to really go into that place of the source of our experience, we need more than just mindfulness. Or we need mindfulness all the way, or samadhi all the way, which is not relevant to a weekend retreat in Indore. What is relevant is mindfulness plus. And so I want to just suggest one or two places of mindfulness plus, kind of add-on, the add-on. The first place that is important is faith. Faith, trust, our ability to put our heart into the practice. And it's really important as a quality in the Dharma. It's putting our heart into it. It is, you can feel how it will amplify, because a biribua, mindfulness. Our heart is in it. The Buddha talked about putting your heart, awakening the heart in a number of different ways, but I'll just give a few guidelines. One of them is simply what you're doing already, which is inspiration. If something touches you, it's a YouTube talk, it's reading a book, it's listening to this now, this person talking to you right now, it doesn't matter. But getting inspiration, meaning understanding that there's a bigger world there, and really loving that bigger, with a possibility of a bigger world than I previously could imagine. And that the Buddha talked about it again and again as being one of the powers that inspire our practice. First, inspiration. Then when you go into meditation, you fly, because you feel inspired and you feel your heart is in it. And you have faith. So it takes mindfulness out of the technical realm. Mindfulness is not a technique. It's not a training like going to the gym, the Hatha Kosha. It's where we go, wow. It's the wow. And there may be many little wows, or maybe a big wow. Another place of faith is traditionally called faith, which is verified, which is supported by experience. Because we have moments of calm, we may have moments of silence, we may have moments here of just a small joy of walking out in the grass And being with the trees and the birds in talking to us, and small moments of joy and relief and release, they don't have to be dramatic, but they tell us that it's already inside us, because if it wasn't there already, we couldn't experience those moments. And there's a famous story of the Buddha who was also struggling at some point. And then he remembered that at a young age, he was sitting under a tree and he kind of dropped naturally into deep samadhi, which was deep and joyful and liberating. And he realized, if it happened to me when I was a boy, it means that it's already in me. I don't have to look for it so hard, as if I'm fishing for something else, somewhere else. It's already in me. And that you could call faith that is confirmed by experience. So the experience just can be small, but it confirms, well, this is worth it, this is interesting, this is valuable. Another place of faith and trust is something deeply primal. Atik is really in us from our birth, which we trust the world, we trust the womb that gave us birth, we trust our mother, we trust the world in some way. We have a deep relationship. This trust can stay with us in our practice. I trust that there's something very basic that is holding me. We talked about it yesterday. It's very, very basic. In Tehillim, I think it's Tachat HaKanfei HaShchina. The island, to be an island in the stormy seas. That amplifies mindfulness. It helps us to be solid and steady, to be an island. We're sitting here on our seat. We took our place in the world. We are here. And I cannot be knocked over. And I cannot be just undone. And that's a quality that amplifies our mindfulness practice and our samadhi practice. I once asked Sharon in a long retreat, I was in America, and I asked her, what do you think is the one quality that brings practitioners to awakening? And she said, confidence. And it's an interesting answer. It's what I'm saying now. Confidence that we are also the Buddha. Who said we're not a Buddha? It's just we think we're not a Buddha. But what's that? That's also an experience. I think I'm not the Buddha. It's an experience. And we're talking about something beyond experiences. Why? Of course we're a Buddha. Just we forgot what that's like. But we can have confidence in that place in us which is the pure awareness, which is the sources in us, Mukoro, the basis in us. We can have confidence in that. Confidence, very important quality, and it's in this group of qualities. And something also you could call coming from the ancestors. Why am I mentioning the Buddha already maybe 10 times in this talk? He's my father. That's why I'm mentioning. It's not because the Buddha, we have to worship the Buddha. But there is a line, this is our ancestors, this is our message of what's possible, it's running through generations. And that also gives us faith. And also gives us trust. When Thich Nhat Hanh was in Israel many years ago, And he did quite a lot of practice with a group, I forget where it was, in a kibbutz somewhere, but on the ancestors, which is really, many of us couldn't understand why, but now I really appreciate that. Especially being a kind of 60s person that rebelled totally against all of them and all the ancestors and all the previous generations, I was totally against, but I began to realize that there is a message coming through. You can also call it Dharma. It comes through the our lineage or ancestors, if you like. It's a message. It's not people. So there's another place of faith. So a second place of, shall we say, we amplify, we increase the mindfulness and the samadhi is, I remember from my Goenka retreats, Goenka talked a lot about this, and it's in the Pali word atapa, and it's in the Satipatthana Sutta, again and again, atapa. And it means, and the Goenka translates it as, I remember his voice is in my mind, it's one of the words that I really remember, ardently. You know that, if any of you have been on the Goenka retreats, ardently. And it means keenness, it means energy, it means to be keen, to give energy. It means effort. And here is a place which is an interesting place for us. It tells us this is where, this is the place that you go. Go to this place because that's where the fruit is. Like the map in Treasure Island, Iha Matmon, that says, there's a cross on it, and it says, dig here, Choferpo, because there's the treasure. So it's a sense that if we go there, and often this comes from, if we have difficult experiences, we are suffering, we know, we let suffering talk to us. We let suffering say, dig here, because there is where we can, there is where our energy is. Sometimes suffering is our best friend, because it says, go there, that's the energy, and then we really need to go there. Otherwise, you know, we know it'll keep on going. So I don't recommend necessarily all of you have to suffer more, just remember that suffering and difficulty for us can be a source of power. It can be a source of urgency and a source of energy. And it doesn't have to be suffering. It can be other sources as well that say, the fruit is there, go and pick it. And you run, oh, I want it. So the effort can be big effort, and there's a problem with that. If there's too much effort, it's a bit problematic, because a lot of effort is also because of its opposite, which is resistance. If we feel resistance, then we have effort, and we build resistance and effort and trying to overcome, and it's a cycle that can get us stuck. But no effort is also not helpful. So there's always fine lines. These are the fine lines. But to give it, to make it important, to understand what is the effort that's right, is a teaching, and it amplifies our mindfulness. The Buddha was asked, how do I cross the flood? Or how did you cross the flood? The flood of samsara, of ordinary life. And he said, by not struggling and by not stopping. If I struggled, I was swept away. If I stopped, I drowned. So not struggling and not stopping. So it's a fine way, a fine line. I think it really means to be serious about our practice, just to take it seriously, not to have to be obsessed, not to have to be super champion, but to keep, to be serious about the journey, to give energy, to keep the compass of awakening. There's our compass. It's there. And that gives energy and direction and ardency. I'm on the journey. And part of that energy is also joy. And Muli talked about it earlier. That the joy is energy. If we have joy of practice, that brings ardency. This brings keenness. This brings energy. We enjoy. We stop here, and we stop. And it actually we receive energy from stopping, from the joy of not needing to keep turning the wheels. And that itself brings energy. Brings new energy. A third, and I could go on and on because there's many, many, many additions to mindful awareness, but I'll just give one. In the Satipatthana Sutta, there are three bases of mindfulness: body, feelings, and thought, emotion, mind. Kaya, Vedana, and Citta. And the fourth is Dharma. So very often we think, well, the fourth is all the teachings and so on, is the lists of the five hindrances, seven factors of awakening, four noble truths, and so on. There's all lists there, and you think, well, that's not mindfulness. That's teachings. Actually, it is. That is where mindfulness goes. There is Dharma. So when we begin to go deeper into mindfulness, Dharma appears as an object of mindfulness. What does that mean? We begin to notice qualities that grow in us. And we pay mindful attention to them. Mindful attention to energy, which I just mentioned. Mindful attention to what it is that I feel, where I feel stuck. Mindful, not as a problem, I'm stuck, but what is the stuckness exactly? Mindful attention to the question. What's my experience? Mindful attention to love and care. Mindful attention to balance, equanimity. To flowing with conditions, to flowing with situations. There's something really important. One of the, I would say, Dharma would say, be mindful that everything is workable. Doesn't mean that you have the answer, that you don't have issues, but the fact that everything is workable is Dharma. This, even though it seems like at the beginning I said, oh well, this one is too much. I can't deal with this one. Gradually that becomes less and less, that voice. And we realize everything becomes workable. And that's an important stage in meeting our experience and looking, finding the sources of the underground water. I suggest in our practice that we ask a question, Dharma question, every time we sit and walk and eat and brush our teeth with awareness. What is the quality in this moment? What am I learning now? What's changed for me in this sitting? What's happened to me now? It's like opening the qualities and the energies, and it takes it another movement that takes mindfulness beyond just a technique. And for example, if we don't feel silence, we don't feel there's a cacophonia of thoughts, we don't think it's a failure, we begin to ask the question, okay, this is what's happening now, let me ask the question, what is it that's saying? How is my relationship to all that noise in the mind? What am I building? How did I build that? Where is it coming from? Can I love it? Also these guys, this crazy mind. So here are a few kind of directions that would help, I think, amplify our mindful awareness. And slowly, we begin to come to that point of the wheel touching the ground or the saw, this one point. This point has no duality in it. The meeting, the immediate, timeless, endless moment in which we meet or we join the world has no time in it, has no duality. It's not us and the world, it's this meeting point. And gradually that carries us, this non-duality will carry us to the source of sources. It will open worlds for us. We will discover if we go deep, you know, dive into this thought right now, kind of go into it, and we'll get to the source of a thought. We'll see it's a construction, this thought, but it's made of awareness, and we will discover that if we go right into the thought. A lot of letting go of the constructions that we make, a lot of just trust, a lot of allowing awareness to take us, allowing the Dharma to take us, not to think it's us that we have to do everything, letting it take us, letting it just like letting it take us, yeah. And then when we ask what do I do with all of that, when we go out from this retreat, when we ask, what do I do with all of that? Something seems to work better. We may not have all the answers, but if we are deeper and closer to the sources of our experience, we will find that we will have answers that we didn't know before, and they will help us make choices, act wisely, live a fulfilled and a helpful and a wholesome life. Not because we want to do it, we need it, but because we met our sources. We discovered our sources inside. And then we can, life will tell us what to do. That those sources will tell us what to do. Okay, thank you. So we'll take a couple of minutes. So time for some walking, and then at 9 o'clock, gathering for final meditation, metta meditation.